Ever wondered why a can of Coca-Cola tastes better when you can see the label? Or why people will pay $100 for a white t-shirt with a small logo? In Paid Attention, Faris Yacoub takes us on a fascinating journey through the economics of human focus in our hyper-connected world. As the co-founder of nomadic innovation consultancy Genius Steals, Yacoub brings his experience from leadership roles at McCann Erickson and MDC Partners to craft what The Guardian called the most important marketing book of the decade. Embraced by industry leaders from Google to Ogilvy, this book has become required reading at advertising schools worldwide. Beyond marketing circles, it resonates with anyone trying to understand how attention shapes our modern existence. In an age where the average person sees 5,000 advertisements daily but remembers virtually none, Yacoub's insights reveal not just how brands capture our attention, but how that attention literally changes our perception of reality. The fundamental premise of advertising has always been simple. Media aggregates human attention to sell to advertisers. From early radio stations created to sell radio sets to today's $467 billion global advertising industry, the business model has remained remarkably consistent. The very word advertising comes from the Latin advertere, meaning to turn towards, literally drawing attention to something by paying for attention aggregated by something else. What's changed dramatically is the landscape of media itself. While analog broadcasting grew linearly, digital encoding allowed for exponential growth and democratization of content creation. By 2010, humans were creating as much content every 2 days as we had from the dawn of civilization until 2003, approximately 5 exabytes of data. This shift from media scarcity to abundance created what economists call an attention economy, where content is unlimited, but human attention remains stubbornly finite. This scarcity makes attention incredibly valuable. Every time we communicate, we're attempting to change how others' brains operate, harmonizing their worldview with our own. Commercial communications specifically aim to influence mass opinion and purchase behavior. Ideas thrive in proportion to the attention they receive, functioning like solidarity goods whose value increases with adoption. The most successful ideas in history, like the Golden Rule, treat others as you would like to be treated, are concise, memorable, and highly generative across contexts. Attention itself behaves like water, liquid, directional, channeled. Though subjectively understood, attention involves both directionality and duration. William James defined it as taking possession by the mind in clear and vivid form of one out of several possible objects or trains of thought. Modern neuroscience reveals attention comprises multiple cognitive processes with limited capacity, creating a spotlight effect. This limitation causes inattentional blindness, where we fail to notice visible things outside our focus. A property that forms the foundation of advertising's ADA model, attention, interest, desire, action, and the media industrial complex's endless race for our limited mental bandwidth. Brands have evolved from simple markers of origin to complex cultural forces that occupy a central position in modern society. Despite P&G's landmark $57 billion acquisition of Gillette and McKinsey's extensive research showing brands account for up to 70% of intangible assets in mergers, there remains remarkable uncertainty about what brands actually are. Their definitions span a spectrum from simple trade names to the personality of an organization or the symbolic embodiment of all information connected with a product. This ambiguity, rather than being a weakness, actually hints at brands' deeper cultural significance. Yacoub argues that brands now function as myths in modern society, making them inherently complex and multifaceted. Like ancient myths that explained natural phenomena and social order, brands create narratives that help people make sense of their world. Brands consist of interconnected brandemes, constituent parts that collectively form the brand's meaning, similar to how anthropologist Claude Lévi-Strauss described myths as composed of mythemes. These brandemes might include logos, slogans, color schemes, brand voice, and associated cultural values, which work together to create a coherent narrative. This structural similarity explains why brands resist simple definition yet remain culturally powerful. The author suggests this mythic function emerged as traditional myths declined in Western culture, with brands filling the evolutionary niche left behind. Powerful brands like Nike, Just Do It, transcend mere athletic equipment to embody personal achievement and determination. Apple represents not just technology, but creativity and innovation, while Disney embodies magic and childhood wonder. These brands have crafted cohesive mythologies that go far beyond product attributes, becoming systems of meaning that consumers actively incorporate into their personal identities and life stories. Moving beyond Paul Feldwick's definition of brands as a collection of perceptions in the mind of the consumer, Jacob proposes that brands are collective perceptions that exist socially. Drawing from Wittgenstein's argument against private language, he suggests an individual brand makes no sense. Our understanding exists in relation to collective understanding. For instance, Coca-Cola's meaning isn't just personal preference, but draws from shared cultural associations with happiness, celebration, and Americana. Using John Searle's philosophy of social reality, he demonstrates how subjective opinions collectively create objective reality. Just as money has value because we agree it does, brands gain objective existence and monetary value through collective perception. This explains why brand value can be measured in billions despite being essentially intangible. The mythological nature of brands also explains their resilience. Just as ancient myths evolved while maintaining core meanings, successful brands can adapt to changing times while preserving their essential character. This is evident in how brands like Levi's or IBM have maintained relevance across decades by evolving their narratives while staying true to core values. The mythic framework helps explain why brand meaning can't be completely controlled by companies, as it exists in the collective consciousness and evolves through social interaction. Brands create remarkable value by fostering seemingly irrational consumer behaviors. People consistently and willingly pay significant premiums for essentially identical products. The law of double jeopardy, a fundamental principle of marketing science, demonstrates that stronger brands with larger market share not only attract more buyers but also enjoy greater loyalty through repeat purchases. This phenomenon spans remarkably diverse categories, from Hollywood actors to laundry detergent, luxury cars to breakfast cereals, showing the universal nature of brand power across markets. Jacob powerfully illustrates this concept with Tide detergent, which commands a 50% price premium yet outsells its nearest competitor by 2-to-1 despite minimal functional differences. Remarkably, Tide became so valuable it functioned as street currency in certain communities, exchangeable for drugs and nicknamed liquid gold, demonstrating the profound psychological power of brand preference even in supposedly low-interest categories. Similar examples can be found with brands like Nike, where consumers routinely pay substantial premiums for sneakers manufactured in the same factories as lesser-known brands. Drawing from Daniel Schachter's groundbreaking memory research, the author introduces the concept of brandgrams, neural patterns encoding brand experiences, similar to how memories form as engrams. Successful advertising leverages elaborative encoding by connecting new information to existing knowledge, improving recall. For instance, when Coca-Cola associates itself with happiness and celebration, it builds upon decades of positive associations. But memory isn't simple recollection. It's a new experience created when a current cue combines with the stored engram. Thus, when consumers encounter brand communications, they don't merely process the message, but experience a unique gestalt combining the communication with their pre-existing brandgram, explaining why the same advertisement can affect different consumers in vastly different ways. Brands seeking authenticity face a fundamental paradox. Commercial entities cannot genuinely be grassroots or non-commercial by definition. True authenticity comes from consistency between stated values and actions, as demonstrated by companies like Patagonia and Ben & Jerry's. The author traces brand evolution from the superficial, aspirational brands of the 1980s, exemplified by luxury fashion houses, to the manufactured authenticity of the 1990s, seen in brands like The Body Shop, suggesting brands should now embrace their shadows, socially unacceptable qualities typically hidden from view. This approach has worked well for brands like Old Spice, which playfully acknowledges its masculine stereotypes. Strong brands, like enduring myths, resolve cultural contradictions. Apple makes technology human and accessible. Dove makes beauty universal and inclusive. Nike makes athletic achievement attainable, providing meta-narratives that help people find meaning amid life's contradictions. These successful brands don't just sell products, they offer solutions to deeper cultural tensions and personal identity challenges, explaining their remarkable ability to command both premium prices and lasting loyalty. The author challenges traditional market research, explaining that our conscious mind may not direct behavior as we think. He argues that decisions often happen unconsciously before we're aware of them, making the brain the most complex, multivariate system in the known universe. While classical economics assumes rational decision-making, behavioral economics recognizes that people are influenced by others' behavior and habits. Market research fails because people don't know why they do things and create rational justifications when asked. Studies show attitudes poorly predict behavior, with subliminal influences losing effect when brought to attention. Despite being an $11 billion industry, research should be understood as wrong but useful, best when combining multiple approaches like ethnography and physiological response testing rather than relying on claimed data. Decades of research show that rational messaging has minimal impact on changing behavior compared to emotional response. Robert Heath found advertisements with high emotional content enhanced brand perception regardless of message content, while those low on emotion had no effect despite being information-rich. A meta-analysis of IPA Effectiveness Awards concluded that the most effective advertisements of all are those with little or no rational content. This contradicts our metacognitive error that we make rational decisions. Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow explains this through System 1, Automatic, Rapid, and System 2, Logical, Slower Thinking. Why do people love Coca-Cola? Dan Ariely's Predictably Irrational demonstrates that we're not rational beings. Our decisions are influenced by anchors, priming, emotions, and context operating below our attention threshold. In taste tests, Pepsi typically wins blind tastings, but when brands are revealed, people prefer Coca-Cola. Brain scans reveal that the Coca-Cola brand activates different memory and emotional associations that literally change the taste experience. When Coca-Cola released white polar bear cans for Christmas 2011, consumers claimed the soda tasted different despite no formula change. How do advertisements work? While advertising seems simple, using mass media to create product awareness, the reality is far more complex. The more we learn about human thinking and behavior, the more we discover processes hidden from view. Attention is slippery, and campaigns rarely pay for themselves short-term, but can impact for decades. Two currently favored models of advertising effectiveness contradict each other. The engagement model, developing deeper consumer relationships and earning attention, versus Robert Heath's low attention processing, which suggests subliminal messaging is more powerful than conscious engagement. Heath argues that implicitly learned associations are more durable than explicit memories. Rather than choosing between models, effective communication planning requires understanding when each approach is appropriate based on consumer needs and context. We falsely established a binary opposition between rational and emotional decision-making, when in reality, emotions are the lubricants of reason. Without emotions, we cannot make decisions at all, as proven by patients with damaged amygdala who lose decision-making ability. The somatic marker hypothesis explains that when cognitive processes become overloaded with complex, ambiguous choices, physiological affective states associated with reinforcing stimuli help guide decisions. Despite our cultural belief that more choice equals more freedom and happiness, research shows too many options actually make us unhappy. Schwartz's paradox of choice reveals that people love choice but hate making decisions. A Columbia-Stanford study demonstrated this perfectly. A 24-flavor jam display attracted more shoppers but sold 1/10 as many jars as a 6-flavor display. Brands solve this problem by functioning as heuristics that eliminate the cognitive burden of decision-making in hyper-capitalist economies where we face 44,000 items in the average supermarket. Our attention system dictates what we see, but we struggle to believe this truth. The invisible gorilla test demonstrates inattentional blindness. We can look directly at something yet not see it when our attention is focused elsewhere. Eye tracking confirms people miss the gorilla despite looking right at it. Similarly, change blindness experiments show people fail to notice when conversation partners are swapped during brief interruptions. We suffer from change blindness, the metacognitive error of believing we'd notice such changes when evidence shows we don't. Traditional advertising wisdom dismissed borrowed interest as a sign of weak product value, assuming ads must express differentiating product truths. This thinking is flawed. No unique product claims can be maintained long-term, and consumer trust in traditional advertising is declining steadily. Borrowed interest, like PG Tips Chimps or Cadbury's Drumming Gorilla, is actually a sound strategy for attracting attention to otherwise uninteresting products. Moore's Law has become the driving force of media change. As computing power doubles every 2 years while costs halve, digital media space has become essentially infinite. Memory that cost $300,000 per gigabyte in 1981 costs mere pennies today. This exponential growth has created unlimited media bandwidth filled with infinite content, much from social networks. Media now functions as solidarity goods, worthless if unseen, valuable when widely shared. Facebook's algorithms prioritize content shared by friends, making shareability crucial for visibility. If content doesn't spread, it effectively doesn't exist. The word awesome once meant something that inspired both awe and terror, like the presence of God. This original meaning reveals why awesomeness matters so crucially in today's infinite mediascape. With everyone constantly creating content and culture, how do you capture attention? Studies by the New York Times show their most shared articles inspire awe, content with epic scope that forces readers to view the world differently. As Wharton professor Dr. Berger explains, emotion leads to transmission, and awe is quite a strong emotion. If I've just read something that changes how I understand the world and myself, I want to talk to others about what it means. In a digital world where content is increasingly pulled by consumers rather than pushed at them, brands face a fundamental challenge. The traditional model of interruption marketing is failing as consumers gain more control over media consumption. Media consumers now give continuous partial attention to multiple streams simultaneously, rendering one-dimensional metrics like impressions inadequate. From the consumer perspective, traditional advertising represents an unbalanced value exchange. They give up their scarce and valuable attention, but receive little in return. Research confirms people see brand relationships as one-sided and limited in value. The solution is value-added communication that balances this exchange, delivering both messaging and genuine value to consumers. If content alone is no longer sufficient for brands, what should they do? The democratization of publishing and content creation has fundamentally changed the marketing landscape. Previously, the ability to make things public was a privileged, expensive act, often controlled by governments and the media industrial complex. Unlicensed printing presses were illegal in England until the late 17th century. Moore's law has enabled everyday consumers to approximate the computing power once reserved for professional studios. Digital technology has given every consumer content creation powers that once required substantial resources. As Clay Shirky noted, what once took an entire publishing industry now takes the press of a button on a blogging platform. In this environment of infinite content, advertising agencies must reposition themselves beyond mere content creation to become purveyors of ideas, providing solutions to business problems. Historically, agencies expressed truths about products through art and copy, but now any dissonance between brand promises and delivery erodes trust. As Douglas Rushkoff suggests, brands must abandon communications as a separate task and instead do all the right things that you want talked about. Brands will be built by behavior and content that communicates that behavior. Technology provides a canvas not yet effectively colonized by amateurs. As Arthur C. Clarke noted, sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. Technology speaks by doing, creating utilities, tools, services, and ideas that earn attention. The WWF demonstrated effective technology use by developing a file format similar to PDF that simply couldn't be printed, a perfect solution for their campaign promoting cautious office printing. Brands still maintain an advantage over empowered consumers through their ability to deliver scale. While epic scale actions like Red Bull's Stratos project, Felix Baumgartner's record-breaking 24-mile skydive are impressive, smaller actions that create genuine happiness for real people can also effectively generate attention. Coca-Cola championed this approach with their series of surprising vending machine videos, which achieved over 6 million organic YouTube views at a fraction of a typical TV ad's cost. Ideas are fundamentally recombinant, unexpected combinations of existing elements, rather than wholly original creations. This postmodern view sees creativity not as divine inspiration, but as the art of remixing, repurposing, and finding connections between disparate concepts. The digital age has made this remix culture dominant, with bits endlessly commingling with bits. Creativity isn't magical, but simply a way of thinking that combines elements in non-obvious ways to create something useful or beautiful. When we call something creative, we're recognizing a particularly unexpected combination that somehow works. This connection between disparate ideas creates the eureka moment. As Aristotle noted, the greatest thing by far is to have a command of metaphor, because finding similarity in difference is the essence of new thought. James Webb Young explicitly stated that ideas are new combinations. And researchers describe innovators' ability to connect seemingly unrelated concepts as associating, a key to creating non-obvious combinations. Banksy's 2009 exhibition at Bristol City Museum and Art Gallery perfectly exemplifies the creative power of theft and remixing. When given an official gallery space, Banksy created Banksy vs. Bristol Museum, treating the entire museum as his canvas. Most tellingly, he engraved Picasso's quote, "The bad artists imitate, the great artists steal," on stone, signed it as Picasso, then crossed that out and signed it Banksy, literally stealing the idea while claiming his place among great artists. Andy Warhol perfected the industrial approach to recombinant art, applying Ford's manufacturing model to artistic production. His studio wasn't called the factory for nothing. It was literally an assembly line for silkscreens, producing endless variants that were same but slightly different. Art, like branding, operates on a simple value equation. People will pay more for something that has received attention. Warhol understood this perfectly, consciously turning himself into an art brand. Planning must evolve as our understanding of behavior and culture changes. As Mark Pollard notes, planning is part science, part intuition, with intuition making planners stand out. The new approach focuses on three questions. How do we create value? How do we understand participants and passives? How do we inspire brand behavior, not just utterances? The complexity of today's mediascape demands an integrative systems approach that breaks down silos between media and advertising. Content alone isn't enough in an infinite space where everyone creates content constantly. Brands should be understood as behavioral templates. Actions constitute identity rather than merely reflecting it. As Jeff Bezos says, a brand for a company is like a reputation for a person. Traditional advertising briefs have remained remarkably unchanged for decades, revealing an industry irony. Agencies sell differentiation to clients while struggling to differentiate themselves. Many agencies no longer anchor their work to clear beliefs about how people, brands, and advertising function. Modern briefs must move beyond messaging approaches and incorporate fresh insights from multiple areas. One smart response to diminished cultural latency is low-latency advertising, work that responds to actions in one part of the media system in other parts, approaching real-time. The Old Spice response campaign exemplified this approach, winning the internet for days by having Isaiah Mustafa respond to tweets through YouTube videos. The vertically integrated production team at Whedon & Kennedy created 186 short films in just 3 days, generating over 1 billion earned impressions. The traditional flow of media is being reversed. Rather than simply pushing content outward, brands are now incorporating real people's voices into their advertising. Tweets appear in print ads, while brands create YouTube videos delivering products to fans who mention them on Twitter. The fundamental shift is that advertising used to tell you how brands could solve problems, now it needs to actually solve problems and then tell you about it. The advertising industry's future depends on understanding what business we're truly in. Simply buying attention no longer works. No one has enough money to outshout the rest of culture. The need for creativity and strategic resource allocation has never been greater. Advertising isn't dead, and agency structures are actually well suited for complexity since they separate ideas from executions. What's dead is the agency process that can only produce traditional advertising. The world demands broader solutions. Agencies must embrace a wider creative palette and work with clients to create value in whatever form is most appropriate. The future will be awesome, at least for those paying attention.